Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Hey, good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. Darren McFarland, that's me, down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donnick over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe hanging out on the west side in Bellevue, and Marquise Munson at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, which is our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by Rumble On. .com. Gentlemen, how we doing?
Wonderful.
Doing well.
Anybody take in the race last night?
Oh, yeah. You know I did.
I took in some of it, and actually took in more toward the end. It was called with, what, about 28 to go? Is that right?
Yeah, 20 officially.
20 but, to go?
They ran around under caution. It looked like it was going to move out, that it was just a little bit of a just a blip on the radar, and it was light, and they were holding on to the racetrack, so it looked like it was moving out, and then the bottom fell out, and that was it. They weren't gonna go through the drying process for 20 laps. So
I got a couple of phone calls. I saw the phone call came right after Kyle Busch dumped Chase Elliott, and then he told him on the track that he was number one. Chase Elliott told Kyle Busch that. I didn't see. Was there anything said afterwards? Like I said, I didn't get to hear the words. Did anybody interview Chase Elliott? Did Kyle Busch get interviewed?
Yeah. So Chase didn't talk, but Alan Gustafson, Chase Elliott's crew chief, did. And for those of you that don't know, Alan Gustafson was actually Kyle Busch's crew chief when Kyle first came into the sport, when he was at Hendrick Motorsports. So they know each other very well and have a good relationship. So what ended up happening was the cars come down pit road when it was raining, and they hadn't told the drivers to get out yet. Alan Gustafson is sitting on the pit wall in Kyle's pit, just staring down Kyle Busch. And I'm going, this could be interesting. And on to one side of him, you have a big member of Kyle Busch's crew trying to calm him down. You know, another guy that he knows that's been there a long time. Like, hey, Alan, hey, man, let's be cool. Let's everything be cool. Well, then you have a member of Chase Elliott's crew that I guess he just wanted to show what he had, the gun show, tatted up. I mean, he's pulled his uniform down. I mean, he's got the muscles out. So I'm thinking this could get very interesting. And Kyle gets out, and they immediately cut to the cameras. Like, they're interviewing Denny Hamlin, who won the race.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, Denny Hamlin won the race.
He won the race. He won the mask contest. I mean, he won it
all. He did. That was pretty. That was impressive.
It was fantastic.
I know you didn't watch, but have you seen Denny Hamlin's mask?
It was his face.
No, I have not.
It was his face.
Yeah.
Oh, he put his face over his face. Okay. Yeah.
It was hilarious. Awesome. I mean, that whoever did that, that is fantastic.
He went on Scott Van Pelt afterwards, and Scott was giving him props for that. So anyway, so Alan Gustafson, they finally cut to Kyle Busch and Alan Gustafson, and immediately you hear an F-bomb. So F-bombs are flying, and you know Mike Joy is apologizing, but they're having a heated discussion, not physical. They are not practicing social distancing at this point, but they are having a very heated discussion. And Kyle then, because Kyle said on the radio, he goes, "I misjudged it. My bad, I misjudged it.
Yeah, Jeff Gordon basically, Jeff Gordon is being as politically correct and as nice as he can be on the broadcast. And Jeff Gordon couldn't put a shiny face on that one. He was like, yeah, I don't really have a good explanation for that one other than he dumped him.
He dumped him. And so they did interview Matt Yocum, who was the only pit reporter there, finally gets over to Kyle Busch, and he's like, okay, so take us through what happened. And Kyle says, you know, just a bad mistake by me. I completely misjudged. He went through the sequence in the race because I thought I had the room, and I just came up on him, and I got into him, and I hate it for those guys. You know, I was there for a long time. I know a lot of those guys. Alan was my crew chief. You know, I would never do anything intentionally, but I understand.
Was his nose growing as he was saying that?
His ears were. Oh, wait, they were already dead.
Wow.
But,
I'm now looking at the mask, which is, I have to say.
It's fantastic.
It's even better than how you guys built it up.
It's
fantastic.
It is absolutely standing ovation worthy.
So, I think he might start something there. Why don't we just all get faces?
Because I've seen some drivers that have masks with their sponsors on it. I'm like, okay, there you go. There's another opportunity to put the brand out there. But the face was fantastic. So I hope others do that too. Good on Denny. But, yeah, so Kyle did. He admitted that he did wrong. And he even said, he goes, "And I know how this works. I mean, I know that I have a target on my back now, and they're going to get me at some point." So he understands how it works. But, yeah, I don't know. But I will give Chase Elliott props. That bird was a 10 out of 10.
Great form.
It was fantastic. Willie, if you haven't seen it, you need to look at the video. It's all over Twitter. And I
mean, halfway up the track, just sitting there. If he could run up on the car and throw it on the net, he would have thrown that bird right on the net, man.
Oh, yeah. It was good. It was good. And
but did they kind of frown upon drivers running up on cars on the track?
Yeah, because of the Tony Stewart situation a few years ago. But NASCAR did say that they're not going to fine Chase Elliott for the bird or, you know, not going straight to the ambulance, because the rule is you get out of your car and you walk straight to the ambulance. You're not, but, you know, because of what happened a few years ago with in the dirt racing accident with Tony Stewart, where he accidentally hit a guy and unfortunately lost his life. So they've tried to take some safety precautions with that. But the bird was fantastic. There's already a GIF. So it's that, and then there was a fox on the track. So it was a wild night in Darlington.
There you go. That was, there were my two takeaways is 10 out of 10 on the bird and 100 out of 10 on the Denny Hamlin mask. That was just absolutely fantastic.
Our buddy Vince Ferrara was watching too. He was tweeting.
He wanted to talk to me last night, but he wanted to wait till after the race, and I told him, "Yeah, we'll have to talk tomorrow." I love you, man, but I'm not talking. Yeah, I was tired last night, so
yeah, I understand.
I didn't last very long, so we're gonna talk today at some point. But we need a breaking news sounder, guys. We really do, because
I just saw this.
Yeah, I really, this is very important to the show. This is the news of the day, in my opinion. For three of the four of us, this is the news of the day. Apparently, the mayor of Nashville, John Cooper, has made the announcement that Phase 2 will begin on Monday.
That actually wasn't the news I was talking about, but that's good news. That's big news. I love that.
Well, for three of the four, that means... does that not mean that we can get our haircut on Monday? Is that true?
I think it's by appointment. I think you have to make an appointment.
I will make an appointment. I'll get in there on Monday.
Texting my barber right now.
So, right? Is that phase? That's part of phase two, correct? I know that what I saw was live music can return, and the Nashville restaurants and bars that serve food will, I guess, that will be a part of the reopening on Monday, which will be Memorial
Day. Okay, now live music, I didn't realize was a part of that. So
it says live music can return to the Nashville restaurants and bars that serve food on Memorial Day as a part of phase two of the city's reopening process.
Such as no more than two performers at one time and dance floors remain closed.
Okay.
Residents will still be required to stay home as much as possible and are asked to wear masks while in public. Gatherings of 25 or more will still be banned. You mentioned restaurants and retail stores, 75% capacity, and bring salons, gyms, and attractions back at half capacity. So gyms as well.
I got an email
basically, what's happened is the numbers have continued to move in the right direction, and therefore we can progress to stage two. So job well done to the city, right? I know we all see cases here or there where people are not paying attention to what they're supposed to be doing, but enough people are. I'm looking at Mayor Cooper's last tweet. Over the last 2 weeks, Metro Nashville has seen a sustained average decrease in new cases, and so this data has basically led to them moving on to phase two. So, all right.
Very
this
good.
Is going to be
job.
Great. We're going to have pictures of the new hairdos of Darren and Marquise. I mean,
and
there's
me.
All kinds of great things to be looking
too.
Forward to now.
Hey, you just keep talking. All I'm right. texting her right now. So just keep talking.
Monday at 2:05.
No, I'm just going to say Monday. You tell me when, and I'll be there Monday.
Yeah.
I'm not going to demand a time, Chase.
Yeah,
we're not in the position to demand times. I'm just going to say, Monday, put me down, tell me when I need to be there.
I just text my barber, hey, stranger, how's it going?
You up?
By the way, the most popular people today are going to be people that are in barbershops and salons, either
yes.
the owners or, you know, people that do hair. They're going to be the most popular people in Nashville today.
Yes.
Their phones are going to get blown up today.
Well, good on Nashville. Now,
repeating some of the stuff that you guys, I think, mentioned there. Small gatherings up to 25 people. Retail and restaurants to open at 75%. High-touch businesses like nail salons at 50% capacity. Whenever possible, stay at home. And, of course, you know, keep doing the guidelines. Keep your hands clean. Wear the mask. All of that stuff to be safe. But, man, this is good news. There's more good news, too. And, Chase, I think you probably saw what I saw. I
yeah, that, that's what that's where I thought we were going with this.
Well, I knew yeah. before that, we move
that's
on.
That's a nice sports story, too.
I knew that things were – I mean, I shouldn't say that I knew from this email last night that that meant good things. But because Rutherford County has already been opening up, and I've already told you guys, I've painted the picture here. So it shouldn't be that big of a surprise. But I kind of felt like, okay, and, you know, if you remember, I said yesterday at the end of the show that Disney, Universal, and SeaWorld were all currently in meetings and putting together their teams to safely reopen their parks. So that was at the end of yesterday's show, and you're like, okay, if they're already having those discussions of, you know, how they're about to open up their theme parks and what it's going to take and what the new rules are going to be, then we're going in the right direction. But I got an email from my Y here, the North Rutherford Y, and they said as of Monday, it's Tuesday, they will be they're going to be opening up the pools, the pool area, and they're going to open up they're going to start having classes again. You know, there's rules; it's different. But you know,
yeah.
like you know, Zumba and all that, they will have group gatherings. So. I'd have to sift through it again and remember what I don't do
yeah.
those. My
it's
wife
just
does.
Gotta be, it's got to be
just
done
be
right.
A number,
it's
right,
be
a certain number
smartly.
Of people and right distance. So I knew that this was all going in the right direction. But today, to get the news that three of us can get a haircut on Monday, oh, this is big.
Huge.
This is big.
Huge.
All right, now to
huge.
The now to the
so,
other breaking
so let's,
story.
Let's also
here
let
in town.
Let me just give you the last point on this that we always say, right? We always say. The virus is still out there. So let's get excited about this. Let's be pumped about it. But let's all keep our eye on the ball that it doesn't mean everything is gone, right? Let's just keep doing the things we're doing that got us to this point. Coach Willie out. Now on to the sports.
Ready on three.
Blow your whistle. Why didn't you blow your whistle?
Went on three. One, two, three.
Okay, let's go. Ready? Break.
All right. Now to the sports story that's breaking as we speak. It's a good day. Getting a lot of breaking news. Who wants to take it?
I will let Willie have the honor.
Well, I was going to say, Willie, we're going to hear his interview with Derek Mason, which, Bo, by the way, this news was not out there for this interview, so you will not hear this brought up into the conversation, or at least what we're about to tell you. So, Willie, the floor is yours.
Well, and this is something that I don't think anybody will be surprised
no.
to hear, but it's now official. I think we've been having this vibe from the very day that she was named the interim, but Candace Story Lee has now officially been named the athletics director at Vanderbilt. The interim tag has been taken away. So congratulations to Candace Story Lee, the first African-American woman ever to be an athletic director in the SEC. That's just fantastic news.
Very cool. But you're right. Not a big surprise, but nonetheless, it is official. And it's also official. She has texted me back and says, will 12:30 work? How fast can I write yes?
12:30 on Monday?
12:30 on Monday.
See, you're good because we don't have a show. So
I don't know.
That helps you out.
I know.
Well, I thought you and I thought she said, you were texting Dr. Lee. I thought you were texting Dr. Lee to come on the show at 12:30 on Monday.
No, I'm doing that.
No.
Okay, let's do that.
She did follow up with masks.
So we're
please.
Not even going to wait till the show's over on Monday. Darren is going to leave the show to go get the haircut on Monday right at the
– We don't have a show on
doors
Monday,
open.
Do we?
No, we don't.
Okay. I was like,
oh,
guys,
I forgot.
Guys were, you guys
so
were
your
messing
salon
with
is
me.
Open on Memorial Day?
Yeah. Willie, what do you think? They've been closed for 2.5 months. You think she's taking Memorial Day off?
I think they need another day off. Come on. You only get so many holidays.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you go own a business and see how that works?
You're saying we might be able to do some shopping on Monday.
Full disclosure, I called a team practice for Saturday. Everybody's coming. And somebody just happened to say, just so you know, just a heads up, but I mean, we're in. It's Memorial Day weekend, and I totally forgot about it. I honestly did. I didn't even remember that this weekend was Memorial Day weekend. That's how, like, lost in all of this, like the days and the calendar. Like, I don't even look at the calendar. Yeah, I didn't even know that this weekend was Memorial Day weekend till a couple of days ago.
Yeah, I know. I've kind of lost track of it.
Did you guys know?
Yeah, I was
the whole time.
I had it kind of
yeah,
a week.
I knew.
I had it in my mind a week later, but then I looked. I was like, yeah. Yeah.
Well, one of the dads told me he's so messed up, he took next Friday off. Not tomorrow. He took next Friday off to have a 4-day weekend. He got it mixed up, too.
Mm,
yeah, he meant to take off tomorrow.
Oops.
Yeah. Well, you know, next Thursday, I'm headed to L.A. Oh, wait.
He's like, I just thought it was the last weekend in the month.
No.
Nope.
No, I was supposed to, you know, see, I got depressed thinking about this because I was supposed to be in Cincinnati for Ryan's bachelor party this weekend and then headed to L.A. for baseball next week, but not so much.
Yeah, all those baseball trips that we had.
You have to cancel yours too, don't you?
Yep. Yep, end of June, early July. Got to cancel it.
Boo.
In New York City, of all places. That's where we picked our anniversary trip, yeah. New York City.
And I picked L.A., so.
It basically right out of the gates had no chance, and yours didn't either.
Yep. Nope. Nope. When this really picked up, I'm like, well, there we go.
Yep. All right. We will come back and hear some of Willie's interview with Vanderbilt head football coach Derek Mason. He conducted a Facebook Live session with him Tuesday night, and I know a lot of you checked it out, but for those who have not heard this, you're going to want to hear it. On the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back here on Darren Donick and Chase, and it's fitting in the wake of the news just minutes ago that Vanderbilt has officially named Candace Story Lee the first African-American athletic director in SEC history. So congratulations to Dr. Lee. I had a chance, and as Darren mentioned, this won't reflect the current news, but I had a chance to sit down not with Derek Mason, but as we're all doing these days, the Zoom calls. And for an extended interview, we're going to play you a big portion of it. It's available in its entirety on our Facebook Live page, our Facebook page. So I think this will be interesting to all sports fans and definitely Vanderbilt fans who are used to hearing Coach Mason in the normal grind of the season talking about recruiting or who your quarterback's going to be, what about your new coordinators. We stayed away from those in this particular setting. We wanted to get a little bit more reflective like we have in a lot of our interviews lately with the pace slowed down. And so you're going to hear this. He's got such an interesting background. He grew up in Arizona. He's moved everywhere like a lot of coaches. He's lived in all parts of the country at one time or another. And he's had some incredible influences in his coaching career, including Andy Reid, including Mike Tomlin, including, of course, Jim Harbaugh.
We talk about some of those things during this interview. I think you'll enjoy it. It's a side of Derek Mason you may not have ever heard before. So here's my conversation with Coach Mason.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into game night here on 102.5 The Game, Facebook Live. Willie Donick here with you, broadcasting from my home on the east side here, and I'm really pleased to be joined by Derek Mason, the head football coach over at Vanderbilt University. And Coach, thank you so much for doing this with us tonight.
Willie, thank you for having me, man. It's great to be on with you.
We all have different perspectives on Vanderbilt to us. Maybe somebody who grew up as a, quote, sidewalk alumni who's never left Nashville. They have one appreciation for Vanderbilt. Somebody who maybe came to school who grew up in, you know, New York or somebody or someplace like that might have a different perspective. Because you've been to all these places, now that you've been at Vanderbilt for a while, what do you appreciate most about the university itself? What makes it unique in your mind?
You know, I really respect and love that Nashville is a big city that feels like a small town. You know, when you walk the streets of Nashville, I mean, it's unique. You can feel the music in the air. You can feel the liveliness of the city. But you know, you can get right outside the city and you can find yourself being, 5 minutes from a lake that you can jump on with a fishing pole, man, and catch some fish. People genuinely respect privacy here, I think, for the most part. They've seen stars, they've seen regular people, and they treat them all the same. You know, I think what you find in this town is that good folk are good folk, and when you talk about the entertainment industry, I think a lot of people in the entertainment industry have ran to this city. Okay, in droves, just to get away and just, you know, feel normal, to not get caught up in the rat race. This isn't a rat race city. It's a city that has a heartbeat. It's got business, commerce, entertainment, but it's also got a genuine love, whether it's musical tastes or whether it's food. Nashville's a foodie town. It's a, you know, whether you're going Germantown, whether you're going East Nashville, well, West Nashville, whether you go 12 South, Franklin, you know, it doesn't matter. This place has a uniqueness, you know, to it. And it's really a town of neighborhoods. You go from one neighborhood to the next, and it's really cool because you can touch a lot of different neighborhoods from North Nashville to really, when you talk about, you know, and being in this area from North Nashville over to let's say West End, and it totally different vibe, you know, Germantown to 12 South, totally different vibe. I just like everything that this city's about. And I'm not saying that because I'm here. I've been here longer than I've stayed at any other place in my career. So I think that says a lot about how I feel about Nashville, because like for me, if it didn't feel good, you know, I probably would have left a while ago.
So you have this journey, and you mentioned some of the names that you've worked with at one time or another. And these are big time names. These are A-list coaches. So I just want to name off a couple of them, and I might skip around the timeline here. But just give me a quick thumbnail on maybe what you learned the most from guys like this. And so let's start with Andy Reid, because here he is. He's just won a Super Bowl. He's an extremely popular guy who's won a lot of games. But the thing you hear about him most, more so, I think, than the brilliance of him as a coach, he always seems to be regarded as this really genuine guy. So what's the number one thing you learned from Andy Reid?
Love. Andy, you know, he loves unconditionally. You know, I mean, he loves his family. And he loves the players he coaches. He loves the game. And, you know, when you love, he's committed to his family, the game. He's committed to everything that a football coach should be committed to. And so when I think of Andy Reid, I was so happy, man, just like everybody else. But, you know, love is what I see. I mean, you can see how genuine it was from his players. I mean, even before the game even commenced. Just the week leading up to it, those guys wanted to win for Andy. Those guys were playing, you know, the game because they wanted to win. But how often do you see grown men truly act like children? You know, they those guys, man, love Andy. And I think that's who he's always been. He's been somebody that transcended color. It wasn't about color, you know, man, for Coach. Man, you knew he cared about you, and you knew that he had the best intentions for you, okay? You know, whether he was hard and stern on you, or whether he gave you a hug and told you the truth. You know, Coach Reed was always going to tell you the truth, and I think a lot of times in our lives we need people to tell us the truth.
What about Mike Tomlin? To explain your relationship with him. He's another guy that, you know, has the utmost respect. He's been in the one place for such a long time, and a really tough place to win. You know, you're under the microscope when you coach the Pittsburgh Steelers for as long as he has. So tell us about your relationship with him.
You know, Mike Tomlin is somebody that I look to, man, but I talk to as well. You know, when you say look to, you know, when I saw Mike become the head coach, for me, it made it all possible. Truly, it made it all possible. When he was leaving Minnesota to go to Pittsburgh, I was coming to Minnesota. Had known Mike. Obviously, he played at William & Mary. And you know, very smart, very intelligent, sharp coach. Was well, you know, thought of in the coaching profession. But those weren't the things that drew me to Mike. It was, you know, I mean, his ability to be believable, okay, and genuine, and command. He made them take notice of who he was, not by what he said, or not just by what he said, but really how he walked. He walked it, you know, like Mike believed it, okay, and he made you believe in him, and that's a skill, you know, like to have people, you know, walk and believe in you, you know, that's a skill. You know, I mean, a lot of people say, you know, it was the Rooney Rule that got, you know, Mike Tomlin hired. Well, maybe it was, but I know this much. You got to walk into a room and capture a room and make somebody fall in love with you in order to get the opportunity. And that's exactly what he did. The people at the Vikings loved him. The people in Tampa loved him. And when you look at Mike, you know, man, Mike, again, he's able to lead men. You know, when you can truly lead men, it shows. They play for you. You know, they commit to you. He's also able to discipline men. And I think that's a skill that you just don't see a lot of nowadays. A lot of people let, you know, young men go their own way. But he's been able to make the tough call and make tough decisions. And that's something that's an admirable, you know, trait. You know, when you talk about, like, having to make tough decisions and do the tough thing, Mike's done it time and time again.
It feels like, I hear this from a lot of coaches, because in hearing you talk about those two guys in particular, that Andy Reid, you start thinking about these brilliant offensive schemes he's known for. Right. But what a lot of coaches have told me over the years is you get into it and you think you've got to out-scheme everybody, you've got to out-fox everybody. But over time, you almost learn that the other stuff that you're just talking about, just motivating people, creating an environment where everybody's on the same page, everybody's getting the most out of their ability, is more important than the X's and O's in the game planning. Would you agree with that?
You know what? I think I would agree with you. I believe that those are the elements that make those coaches unique. Their X's and O's are superior. You know, Andy Reid's always had great X's and O's. Mike Tomlin's always had great X's and O's. I think, you know, even as I've grown with my relationship with Coach Belichick, okay, his X's and O's are outstanding. But I think when you look at what he's done, he's been able to take, you know, the most the toughest athlete. He's been able to take the most disingenuous of athletes, you know, I mean, that people say the cast-offs, and he's been able to, you know, reinvent those guys and help those guys reinvent themselves. Why? Because I think he understands people. I mean, I think he understands the idea that, you know, they want to be good, but sometimes maybe it's about your structure and how you deal with them and where you meet them. Okay. And do you put, you know, some serious parameters around what they do? Because I think everybody wants discipline in their lives, but the reality is only certain people have been able to do it. You know, Coach Belichick is one of those. And so when I look at coaches, when I look at people that I look to, they genuinely have strong qualities. Okay. That allowed them to really set themselves apart. And I think they're all good ball coaches, but I think you got to be more than a good ball coach nowadays. There are a lot of good ball coaches that have come and gone.
How about Jim Harbaugh? He's another guy that always is a lightning rod. He's a guy that's, you know, high energy, grabs a lot of attention. You worked for him at Stanford. What did you learn from him? What did you take out of that experience?
Well, I thought, you know, Jim was, you know, a person, you know, in my mind who was everything that you thought he was. You know, he was tough. You know, he was blue collar. And those are the things that really he really demands from his team. He wants his team to be tough. He's a khaki wearing, you know, cinched belt, you know, pulling, you know, hat down, glasses, ball coach. You know, that's the way he played the game. I mean, Coach Harbaugh's personality to me is no different than he was as a player. He was hard nosed as a player. You know, he was, you know, uber competitive. I got a story about Jim. You know, he asked me to go play tennis with him one day, and we were, you know, on campus. The tennis center was right behind our office. And we went out there and played, you know, I thought it was going to be, you know, maybe a couple sets. We played for like an hour and 45 minutes. And he didn't want to just win. He tried to put me in the dirt now. I mean, that's who Jim Harbaugh is. I mean, he's one that if he's going to compete, he's going to compete at a high level. And so that's what you see. He's highly competitive. I mean, when you look at the recruiting, highly competitive. When you look at games, highly competitive. He hates to lose. Okay, man, he wants to win. And you almost feel like he'd do anything to do it. But I think everybody's got a line, and Jim's got that line. But he draws you in. He makes you believe. And in believing, you know, what you do is, man, you wind up taking a different ride, a wonderful ride. I love my time with Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh is a special man, and he taught me a lot about, you know, mind over matter. Attitude affects outcome.
Mm-hmm. And then I want to ask you about another person that we've known in our own way for a long time because we watched him play, but you know him in a little bit of a different way, and that's Eddie George. You coached his son. You know, it's always tough, I know, or, you know, challenging in a lot of ways. You have all of these families, you know, who have entrusted their sons to play for you. And, right. You know, not all of them get all the playing time they're looking for, but that's a pretty special case to coach Eddie George's son. And obviously, you know, his son is a very special guy. We've learned a lot about him over the years, but he's not like his dad in terms of he's not rushing for 1,000 yards in the NFL, but at the same time, he's going to go on to be a really successful person. So tell us about your relationship with Eddie and Jahir.
You know, Eddie and I met a while ago. I mean, it may have been when he was, you know, still playing, and or maybe he was just finishing up and I was just getting to Minnesota. But, you know, I mean, the one thing about Eddie, you know, his personality just lends itself to everybody. I think, you know, I mean, he's one who makes everybody feel comfortable. But I think our relationship, you know, grew and blossomed, you know, as we got a chance to know one another, you know, throughout my career, you know, and I'd see him at different spots. You know, when I came back from the NFL and I was at Stanford, I saw him at a couple different spots. And when I took the job here, obviously I went through the recruiting process with Jahir. And like for Eddie was always like somebody, man, who gave good advice. You know, Eddie was somebody who cared about, you know, seeing people take you know, their journey, and, you know, is interested in other people and wants to hear other people's stories. But, you know, as I talked with him during the recruiting process with Jahir, I think he learned a lot more about me and I learned a lot more about him. He had been with David Williams at Ohio State. David was with him during that time, and David had told me stories. And so when we had a chance to get together sometimes, you know, I mean, those stories came out and it was good. But through the recruiting process, I really got to understand, you know, who Eddie George is. And, you know, he's a man of many facets. I mean, he's got many layers to him. You know, from football to acting to, you know, investment connoisseur to businessman. I mean, he just can do so many things. But his son was very much the same way. Jahir was a talented, you know, young man, you know, man, coming out of a great program, you know, I mean, in D.C. I mean, he came from DeMatha and he came from a great football, you know, man, legacy. I mean, a great football program. But here's what was important about that. I think Eddie believed, man, that I was going to, you know, coach his son, you know, I mean, to the best of his ability, not to the best of Eddie's ability. And I think, you know, that was something that was clear. I mean, this wasn't about, you know, Eddie. This was about Jair. But Jair is very much like his dad, extremely talented in a lot of different areas. But, you know, as we went through this and we had a chance to figure it all out, I think, you know, our love and passions for some of the same things like music and just the game really became evident. And, you know, man, we've become, you know, close friends. Jair's now at film school at USC, and he's well on his way in his career. But, you know, having had a chance to coach him, having had a chance to spend time with that family, I truly know that you know, man, that relationship was meant to be. And, you know, Eddie's always going to be a friend. Jair's always going to be one of mine, and so I'm thankful.
All right, I got two more questions for you, Coach. Before we
let's get it.
I got one from the audience here. And if you're a high school football player right now, I know it's we're all dealing with the uncertainty, but I'm sure there's high school players that want to figure out how to get the best out of themselves during this time. So what would be the number one piece of advice you would give someone currently playing high school football? You could take that in any direction you want.
Willie, what I would say to anybody out there, especially, you know, when you start to talk about you know, young people, athletes, you know, where they're at. I believe COVID-19 has provided us, you know, some issues that we have to deal with, but you have tough issues, man. You have the opportunity. You know, it's about mindset. It's about, you know, attitude affecting outcome. It's about making sure, man, that you try to, you know, find ways and opportunities to be better. And this just isn't coach speak. I tell my team this all the time. The world has enough problems. Okay, man, we got to be problem solvers. We got to figure out, you know, man, how we can be better, you know, in this time. Because if you can come out of COVID-19 better, okay, not only did you get better, but the people around you got better. Okay, man, your team gets better. And I think that's where we sit today. I mean, there's a great opportunity for you to find a way to be better. I mean, whether it's your mind, whether it's your body, whether it's you know, helping somebody, okay, man, because every investment that you make into somebody else is karma. It comes right back to you. So make an investment. Make an investment in yourself. Make an investment in your community. Make an investment to your team. And if you do that, you know, man, male or female, what I believe is, again, it's karma. I believe good things happen to good people. I believe good things, you know, good things will come out of COVID-19. I mean, I know we've had a lot of pain, like, during this time. You know, I mean, people have lost loved ones and people that they know. But I truly believe that, you know, that's not in vain. We're going to be better because you exercise the opportunity to get better.
All right, let's end on a fun one.
Let's do this.
I was told that, you know, you have some radio experience, that you were once upon a time a DJ.
That music.
But, you know, you talked about your love of music a minute ago. So tell people how music gives you a good balance, you know, away from the coaching. But also tell us about the radio show. So you have your own little studio, right? You can spin records, you know. Tell us about your program.
Well, you know, for me, the idea of music, I grew up like much like people that came through the, you know, late 60s, 70s. You know, music was a voice of, you know, generations. I mean, you talked about, you mean, what it meant. No matter what was going on, it was a song that was written about it, and they could tell you, you know, exactly what you were experiencing at the time. And that's when I fell in love with music. Truthfully, music has always been something that's special to me, and I liked all types of music, from jazz to you know, early R&B to true soul music. I mean, there's different genres, man. But then I look at, you know, classical, and, you know, classical music. Like, to me, when I played the violin as a youngster, my mom made me play it. And so, you know, classical music, you know, has a place in my heart. But, you know, for me, I've just always loved music. And in college, I had a chance to get a radio show.
So what's the music on your radio show? What music are you playing back then?
You know what? Back then, you know, it was R&B, some hip hop. I mean, it was Tribe Called Quest. It was Belle Biv DeVoe. It was Boys to Men, a little New Edition. I mean, it was a late night show. I mean,
this is right on my wheelhouse, Coach. I want to hear the show. This is good.
I mean, it was, you know, it was 12 to 2, Quiet Storm. And so I'd play, you know, hip hop from, you know, 12 to 1 and from 1 to 2. I'd slow it down a little
bit.
I'm talking late night. In college, nobody's really listening to the radio early, man. Everybody's right. they're listening to music late. Absolutely. But, you know, I've always had music as a love. A couple years ago, when I got rid of my iPod DJ, my wife bought me some turntables a couple years ago, man, because I had given my turntables away in college. But she bought me some more a couple years ago, and I got back to spinning, and I got a lot of music. And so for me, the balance, you know, you need a balance. When I come home, like sometimes, and I don't get a chance to, you know, some people come home and watch TV. I'll come home and I'll spin records, you know, for an hour and a half, you know, and it's all mood music. It's amazing. You know, I mean, if I need to slow my mind down, you know, I'll turn on some Anita Baker and roll into some other music. I mean, I mean, I've got so much music, you know, I've been listening to Marvin Gaye and Isaac Hayes. I mean, I'll go back if I'm trying to mellow out, but I'll listen to some current hip hop if I'm trying to move forward a little bit and just trying to get a little bit of energy. So it all depends. But for me, music has always been a first love. So I've stayed there with it. And as I've gotten into this COVID-19, we did the Feed the Heroes movement, or, you know, opportunity, you know, where we were doing some things with first responders. But then once we were done with the Feed Our Heroes, you know, opportunity, man, I decided to make sure that I can spend some time with our alums. And I really wanted to do something a little different. And so I started this morning show called Coffee with Coach. It's a Zoom cam.
Yeah, so tell us about that. You can see the background. People have probably seen that. Some people may know what you're doing with that. But for those that don't, explain.
Yeah, but the Zoomcast is an opportunity for me to be able to talk to former, you know, football greats here at Vanderbilt. And I'm going to have more than just football players, man. I want alumni. I want business people. I want people who have come through Vanderbilt just to talk about their experiences and opportunities. So, man, I'm speaking to one now. So that's the tables are turned. But
yeah.
The idea is just like this. It's to be able to talk about the Vanderbilt experience. You know, what did you learn during that time? Because I think, I don't care if it was the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, 90s, or even now. I think Vanderbilt has a lot of unique properties that still resonate with students today. The times were different. Maybe what you experienced a little bit was different, but I think Vanderbilt as a whole, it provides a unique opportunity, you know, for those who've been through it to understand, you know, the brand of Vanderbilt, doing it in this city, being able to play in the SEC and what that can provide for you. And so for me, it's been something that I've had a fun time with, but I think the people that I've talked to have enjoyed it more.
Wow, that sounds great. So Coffee with the Coach, I hope a lot of people catch that. So Coach, thank you so much for joining us and spending some time here. I would hope that a lot of people listening to this might have learned a few things about you that they didn't know before. So thanks for taking the time. And I know we'll talk again here very soon on our radio show in more of a conventional setting here, but I've really enjoyed this, and take care. I know we'll see each other again very soon.
You know what? Thank you, Willie. You know what? I look forward to having you on Coffee with Coach. So we can talk
anytime.
A little bit about
you tell me, I'm not.
About,
I'm there.
About your experiences, man. So I look forward to it. So thank you. Okay. Take care. Be blessed.
Oh, that will be awesome. All right. So that's Coach Derek Mason, and that is game night here on 102.5 The Game on Facebook Live. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thank
you, Dan. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Thursday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff there. One of our game nights, Facebook Lives. That was Tuesday night, Willie, with Coach Derek Mason, Vanderbilt head coach. And, of course, the news coming over on West End that they have made it official. Candace Story Lee will indeed be their next athletics director, and she is now in a permanent role. And she becomes the first African-American woman in the conference to hold a role like that. So congratulations to her. We will actually have her join the show in the third hour of the program. So she will join us at 12:30. Enjoyed the interview. Of course, shouldn't be a surprise if you've listened to Coach Mason for 6 years on this show with us during football season or outside of the season. You know that he's always a fun interview. And Coffee with Coach, that's interesting. That's That's a pretty neat deal.
Good name.
Coffee with Coach. I like that name. That's a good one.
Indeed. But that's cool that he does things like that. And I enjoy the interview, too. I want to see his turntable set up because, you know, I love music, and I think that'd be cool. Get him to DJ for us sometime.
Could we do that? Does he have the ability during an interview to do that? Maybe leave us with that? Kind of like you have left the show with some chords on the way out?
Yeah, I don't
know. Maybe he spin a record on the way out? Could he do that?
It'd be cool if he could.
He'd have to be in the home studio to do it. I get the feeling he's got a pretty good high-tech home studio in his house, but I don't think he always joins us. Maybe this year he will.
I wonder if he ever takes the setup, you know, to practice, and that he's getting everybody fired up. You know, they do those early morning practices. I wonder if he sets the tables up and plays music as everybody's getting ready for practice. That'd be interesting.
And by the way, we also got our second consecutive day with a new edition reference. How about that?
Yes. I caught that.
That was
Jerry Stackhouse told us yesterday that was his jam. New edition. In fact, he wore that cassette tape out that he had to, you know, do some repairs to his new edition cassette tape. And you just heard Derek Mason throw in new edition. Although he had a list. You could tell he
had a good playlist going.
Good on Marquise. Marquise played some Tribe Called Quest coming back. So
yeah, Marquise, we have to just go on and mark that down every time we have Coach Stack on the show that, you know, we have to bring him in with new edition.
I mean,
you know?
I got a lot of new edition in my folder. So, Mr. Telephone Man, Cool It Now. I could play anything.
I think he said Cool It Now.
It's a pretty deep library.
Didn't he say Cool It Now was his hot spot?
If you want to extend to Bobby Brown and the solo stuff, the spinoff stuff, then you got plenty of stuff. We got years of material.
He likes Cool It Now, though. That was his choice.
He made a point to talk about how cool. I felt like Cool It Now was his the number one. If we were the catcher, we're putting down one finger. Right? We're serving up. It's gonna bring the heater with Cool It Now. That's kind of what I took from the interview.
Yesterday after the show, I actually went and listened to a little Mr. Telephone Man. So I was inspired by New Edition.
Really?
I did.
Wow. Impressive.
I wonder if he does the dance moves, though, because that's what's important about a lot of those songs is they had a whole dance routine for like each song. So I wonder if he does that. Him and Coach Mason together doing the Mr. Telephone Man dance or whatever.
I'm going to say that probably hasn't happened, but boy, wouldn't that be cool if we had that on video?
That would be fantastic.
That would go viral.
Oh, absolutely.
90s outfits on, 80s, 90s outfits, and they're just dancing to Mr. Telephone Man. That would be amazing. Add Coach Corbin to it. Add all the coaches to it.
In fact, we'll ask them the next time we speak with them if maybe that could be kind of a Halloween get-up, right? They could go as New Edition.
Well,
that'd be cool.
We can ask their boss when she comes on at 12:30.
There you go.
That's what we'll do.
So congratulations.
A lot of good stuff in that interview from Coach Mason, though. I mean, that's a pretty interesting group of confidants that he has.
You think?
Andy Reid. Oh, yeah. And we didn't even get to a couple. You know, I wanted to get into David Shaw and his dad, Willie Shaw. Those might be the two biggest influencers because David Shaw and Derek Mason were on the staff together under Jim Harbaugh at Stanford. Harbaugh leaves to go to the 49ers. Derek Mason could have gone to the 49ers with Harbaugh, but David Shaw got the job and said, I want you to be my assistant head coach and defensive coordinator. And it was, you know, Darren, you've been asking a lot of people during this time about the crossroads. Mm-hmm. That's not the only crossroads that Derek Mason had, but that was a big one for him. You know, go back to the NFL or stay and be elevated. And it was really the Shaw family. David's dad, Willie, has been a big influence on him as well. And they were the ones that said, this is what you need to do to advance your career. Take on this challenge. And, of course, it's paid off big for him to become a head coach in the SEC. So, you know, that was something we didn't even get to. This is what's great about the setting that we've put together here for some of these interviews where, you know, you're not trying to hit a break right at, you know, 9 or 10 minutes or 11 minutes or whatever the segment has carved out for you. We have a little bit more time. And so you really find out a lot of stuff about somebody. And we certainly did that with Derek Mason. Chase did it with Tom Glavine. It was really good stuff.
And Ryan tomorrow with Harry Zolnerchuk. should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a very interesting story, I'll tell you. You talk about a guy that earned every second he got on the ice in the NHL. Fantastic.
What's Harry Z up to these days? I know we'll learn more about that tomorrow night, but what do we know what he's been doing?
I'm not sure. I don't know if he's still – I know he was – I think he was playing in the AHL for a while, but I don't know what he's doing with, you know, if he's out of hockey or
– I don't know.
Didn't they bring him back and he was in Milwaukee? Is that right?
They brought him back. You know, he played a lot in the 17 run. During 18, he spent pretty much the whole year in Milwaukee, but they brought him up. I think he played most of the year in Milwaukee. He might have played for somewhere else and then brought back. But I remember they had him. They just wanted him around the team as one of the black aces during the 2018 run. So he was still part of the group. Just kind of that.
He was one of Peter Laviolette's
favorites.
Has a good
influence. Just a guy. Yeah, absolutely. A guy that just has a great influence, a great vibe, positive energy force. You know, you'll hear coaches talk about that. You can't quantify it in the analytics room, as important as analytics are, but those people are vital to a good team, a good environment that gets the most out of it. That was another thing I found interesting, that, you know, the first thing that Derek Mason said about Andy Reid was not this brilliant offensive mind that he's known for, but just, you know, those inner workings. How do you create that environment where there's true love going back and forth? You love the players love you back. You really want to fight for each other. You heard John Hines talking about that the last time we had him on. That kind of stuff is just as important as your scheme, your game planning, your strategies.
At 11:15 in the second hour, we will have Bill Spurlock on, who is the director of Rutherford County Schools. I don't know if a lot of you have seen the news, but we'll get into that with him and more coming up at 11:15 today. Elliot Freeman, our weekly chat with him to kick off the fourth and final hour of the program. Hour number two of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.